outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
I had an incredibly touching experience this week, Wayne.
Oh, you did? Traveling around the world?
Yes, we were in Ohio with some friends. We were in Michigan with some friends. And one night, my wife and I got the privilege of being able to go out on a double date with some friends of ours. And one of the things that we got to go do was go dancing and go ballroom dancing specifically. And my wife loves to dance. She lights up. It's a whole nother level of beautiful Jess when she is dancing.
You do too. You've said that before. You really enjoy dancing too.
Yep. I do. I enjoy dancing, but not to the level of my wife. Like I enjoy it thoroughly, but watching my wife dance is just a completely different level. And we had the opportunity to go and do some, learn some different styles and that kind of thing. And my wife has always wanted to do I got to make sure that I get this right, the Viennese waltz.
Okay.
And it's lots of spinning, very complicated step. It's not easy at all. And one of her bucket lists, though, has been to be able to do it. Well, the instructor was there and a Viennese waltz came on and she asked if he would be willing to teach her. And he was very resistant, like, no. And then he finally gave in and said, yes, I will teach you. She got to go out and do it, and she follows really well. She has a background in dancing, and it was probably one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen, was watching her spinning around the dance floor with almost a six-year-old delight giggle as she is doing this waltz. And it was absolutely incredible. I got to see my wife revert to just breathtaking, unadulterated, innocent, joy-filled Jess. And it was an absolutely incredible experience.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it was a blast. While I was stepping on people's toes and trying not to kick people in the shins.
So you were dancing while she was dancing?
I was dancing while she was dancing, yes.
With someone else?
With a different partner. But in that situation, I got to just sit and watch. And it was wonderful.
Ah, that's awesome. Well, I'm still living in the middle of a construction zone.
You are.
In fact, okay. I'm making the hard push to get everything done this week, which they'll fall a little short because I know there's one thing Friday that will then make something have to happen early next week. But other than that, they should get very close and it'll be nice. So there may be construction sounds yet again. The green tree growing in my house is supposed to be installed today.
Okay.
Looking forward to that. In fact, shortly after we get off this podcast, they're scheduled to be here. So
what is the projected deadline of this construction project? Do you have one, or are we talking the next year you're going to still be tweaking things, or what is this going to look like for you?
Well, Sarah's a tweaker. Yeah, we'll be tweaking things the rest of our lives here, but hopefully getting the contractors away and just becoming friends with them, which is happening. So
okay,
but you don't have to pay for friends to come over. So we'll see how real the friendship is once it doesn't involve money, but it seems good. Well, they're just starting on the outside. Sarah's developing a secret garden. So they're pouring cement today outside on a wall. And
okay.
So they got some other stuff going. That will probably, I would say, another month or two before we nail down everything here. So it's a deal. But yeah. I tell you, I read something the other night that Sarah and I sat down with, reading a book called Sheltering Mercy. It's Prayers Inspired by the Psalms by Ryan Whitaker Smith and Dan Wilt. I'm kind of have a love-hate relationship with this book. It's kind of what they do is they take the psalm and they use it as a kind of seed to then have a prayer. So the prayer's it doesn't stay true to the psalm at all because it involves all the New Testament stuff. Jesus is in here, so it's not David talking.
Okay.
But I started reading this to Sarah the night, and I didn't get very far into it, and my tears were welling up in my eyes because this is her story. This is her story. Here's what it said. I see now that your silence was not absence, that my desolation was not my undoing. In your time, why must long suffering be such long suffering? You plunged into the darkness that held me. You raised me from ruin, reclaimed me, restored me, rooted and established me in love. Just when I had lost the will to sing, your mercy became music to me, an old song older than this tired earth, and yet somehow as fresh and new as the morning. And that's, oh my gosh, I still, even now. This last bit, though, for everyone else listening to this, it's not your will that any should perish, but that all should repent and enter your joy. So I know telling Sarah's story, I see it in people who don't feel like they've been rescued in the same way, not yet. They're much younger than Sarah. So I always say, you know what, this happens when it happens. But
yeah,
that whole found me in the darkness, you plunged into the darkness that held me, raised me from ruin, reclaimed me, restored me. And man, that was so touching. Sarah and I kind of explored that together Sunday night and just lost ourselves in the beauty of her story. And as things kind of wind up here at the house, the reordering of it, this place for Sarah to be, it all just kind of came full circle for us.
Yeah, that, woof. Wow. I think the line in that connected to me the most was, why does long suffering have to be such long suffering? Yes. That, like, ooh, man, knowing your guys' story and even just some of the conversations that I was in over this last week and some of the deep heart laments of, I see God in this. I know there's a way through. I hear him telling me, be patient, stay here, stay present. And yet, how long is the suffering going to be? I mean, how long do we continue to endure this space of hardship before some of the freedom and the breakthrough and the healing is able to come? And as you said with Sarah, I mean, it was, what, almost 60 years of long suffering?
Yep, 64. Some of that not critical. Some of that just kind of a thing in the background. But in the last 20 years have been the real painful ones for Sarah. And yeah, and yet we know why the answer to that question, how long? As long as it takes, right? That's the answer.
Yeah.
It's an ugly answer because where else, the disciples kind of said this to Jesus, where else are we going to go?
Yes.
I mean, no one else has the answer to unlock what needs to be unlocked. And I think from my background growing up, it was, you know, the key to that was God answering prayer. Because I'm praying for this, God should do it. Now I'm just waiting for God, blah, blah, blah. Instead of, no, from the first moment you prayed, God has been involved untangling this mess. And it has taken this long and it may take longer, but let the untangling continue. There's even joy in the untangling, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I got a fresh kick on this last week. Sarah comes out after our move, one of the real disasters from our move. Okay. And she brings out two fine, fine chain necklaces that are knotted into a little tiny ball. And she brings them out and says, I need help with these. And I looked at them going, oh my gosh, this is worse than Christmas lights. Maybe this is the analogy we needed for the transforming love thing. Because man, I finally learned how to do it a little bit. You get a safety pin and you don't do it in the air because the weight of the necklace will keep knotting it. So you got to lay it out on a slick surface and then use like a safety pin to keep picking it apart and keep stretching it out. It took me 3 hours to untangle those two things. And I'm sitting there with all the other work that needs to be done around this house. And I'm sitting at our new counter in our kitchen.
Yeah.
And I'd done it a couple of times. I'd come by and thought, okay, I'm going to get work on these. And I'd play with it for about 5 minutes and go, yeah, no, can't do this. Moved on. Finally, on Saturday, I just sat down with this. I'm going to do this as long as it takes. And I just started taking it apart, and then sometimes, you know, you pull in one thing and it just knots something else. So then the knot's getting bigger and you go, and then it starts to finally unstretch. And the first one, when I finally got close, it was like everything just fell together. It just kind of like, it seemed hopeless, hopeless, hopeless. And then all of a sudden, boom, it was done. The other one was painstaking. And, but I got them both done and I gave them back to Sarah. And I was thinking the entire time I was doing it about our Transforming Love series, I was thinking that this is really the untangling. This is what God does. And how long does it take? As long as it takes. That's what you've got to go with. It's as long as it takes. And I'm going to keep leaning and keep learning love and keep trusting and keep following, even if it takes, and it will for all of us in minor ways, but hopefully not the entire life to get through some of the big stuff that allows us to live freely in him more.
Yeah.
But man, it would to get it done and to sit back on the counter, look at those necklaces and go, man, baby, there's 100 other things I could have been doing today, but I got these two things untangled for Sarah, mainly to get them off the counter because I'm sure they're going to get lost or ruined. So it was part of the remodel project. I need to get this done so it's not in my face because anything that's lying around here seems to get lost and we have to go hunt for it yet again. So anyway, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice. I want to circle back to the comment that you made about where else can I go?
Yeah, good.
This is an interesting lament because I feel like I have sitting in space with people and even in my own life pretty heavily in this space where there's this, man, there's just a torrent of different emotions and tensions that dwell in where else can I go? You know, for me anyway, I know his love. I have seen it come through and I've tried other ways of getting through life and they haven't worked out. They haven't been fulfilling. They've fallen flat. They have been proven as imposters. And yet there's this, I feel like there's almost this ache or this sorrow, not in a bad way, not in a way that I don't trust Father's heart, but it's like, I've abandoned everything else to this. Where else can I go? I don't know anywhere else to go. And yet it's excruciatingly beautiful to sit here right now. You know, like it's excruciatingly beautiful to be present and to still dwell here, not knowing entirely what his love is going to look like as you're untangling that really fine, dainty chain, right? Because at times, man, I have done similar things for Jess with some of her jewelry. And there are times where it's like, I just want to chuck this thing and go and buy a new one. You know, it's like, is it actually worth my time to sit here and painstakingly pull this thing apart and not get in a rush because it's going to break the links. It's going to disconnect it. It's going to break it, you know, and
I had that thought because if I do break this chain, we can buy a new chain. The necklace is still the chain is not that critical, right? You can get a cheap chain even that looks fairly decent. So I had that thought, if I break it, it's okay. We'll just buy a new chain. The necklace, the thing that she loves hanging from her neck, that'll still be good. But
but
I got them done. So.
Well, even my thought has been at times, you know, I could just break this. I can take it back in because it is gold. They can put a new link in it and it'll be fine. You know, we talked about the resiliency of love and having a relationship that has resiliency and foundation and some of the dialogue that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks. And I think this is where it's so vital to have that as a part of your relationship with Father. Because there will be times, especially as you're walking through this, where the temptation is to quit. The temptation is to break the chain. The temptation is just to go out and buy a new one. And
what you can do with the chain, but you can't do with your life.
Totally.
You know, because the danger, I think, and as long as it takes, is I'm just going to stuff this down and try and ignore it and just get on.
Yes.
And that's a crazy thing. And I think what is painful about as long as it takes is if I feel like God's withholding from me, like he could do this, he's not doing it. So I don't know where I stand with him. That to me makes the long suffering, not only longer, but deeper.
Yes.
If I can have the conviction and incubate the enough trust, I guess, to be able to say, God is for me. God is at work to do this. This is taking a long time, not because he's slow or necessarily I'm slow, but because this is deep. And the untangling in the depth of my soul is something that's just taking him time and me time, because in cooperating with that and leaning into more healthy spaces than less healthy spaces in the way I think, the way I self-talk, I mean, we have a participation in the untangling, right? It's not just, we just lay there as couch potatoes. We have a part in the untangling.
Yeah.
And yet it's not up to us. So I think the guilt of I'm not doing something I should be doing, that adds to the pain. God's not doing something he should be doing, that adds to the pain. I think where we got to find our rest is God is at work, and this is a good thing, and I will get through this, and it will be good on the other end, and I will. It is God's will that all be saved and restored and renewed. So people who've heard Sarah's story and just think, oh man, that is so awesome. It is. The healing has been awesome. What you haven't always seen is the depth of pain or the longevity of that pain. You haven't seen it. Sarah's talked about it, but it's different when you see it. She woke me up the other night with just a recurring kind of thing. She just came over and grabbed me and just was crying in tears at 3 a.m. And people don't know that doesn't happen every night. Doesn't happen most nights these days.
Yeah.
But the depth of this journey, it's not just God finally did something good for Sarah. It was through the pain and through the leaning in and through all of that, God kept pushing this chain apart, kept untangling it. And now we're at the later stages of that, and it's glorious. It is so glorious. But Sarah would sit here and tell you, there's so much in my life that still needs to be untangled, which I would say too. I'd say it's true of my life.
Yeah.
But the untangling, the pain is not there. Hmm. The knowing I've been rescued, I have been. And yeah, there's some cleanup stuff. It's when that we talked about so often, that when the gravity that pulls me towards him is less than the gravity that pulls me back to my pain. That's the great moment. It's not that the pain is all resolved, but now the gravity, it would be harder to resist him than it would be to resist the gravity of the world. I think I said that wrong, but I hope people know what I meant. I've got to go back to the tape and see what I said, but it's when it's easier to lean into God than to lean into the other things I found comfort in. That's the key. That's the key moment when the rescue has really been amazing.
I love that idea that the gravity or the pull, the allure of his love is greater than the familiarity and the comfort of our pain or of what's, you know, what we've been in the past. I love that image. That I connect with that so deeply. I think for me, Wayne, one of the deepest challenges that I have had is when in staying in the process, in staying in as long as it takes, is when I see that as long as it takes is also having a negative or a hard impact or cost on those that I love. Like I'm okay hanging in on the process. I'm okay staying present there, working through it, allowing God in to do the untangling. But when I see that it's impacting those that I hold most dear, and that as he untangles that, that's also freeing up the impact on those that I love. That's where a lot of my prayers of, Father, could you really hurry this process up a little bit? Because it's still impacting my daughters. It's still impacting my wife. And I don't want it to. I want to be able to see this untangled in my heart enough to where that love can start to pour out into their lives. And my own pain is no longer impacting those that I love the most. What would you say to that? Especially as you've walked through this with Sarah and she's been in kind of this deep healing process, and you at times have been more the experiential brunt of as long as it takes, right? Like there's been a cost to you for her staying in as long as it takes. What would be some of the things that you would say to somebody that's in that transformational process or is in the healing process of that?
This is, to me, part of the community we talked about last week, the desire for human connection, desire to be connected.
Yeah.
And somehow in that connection, we always, like we do with everything, we idealize it. We always want to see the good side of everything. The reality of the chaos that we live in means that the pain of people I love also affects me, that I'm going to hold. And I've had to hold a lot. I mean, stuff that happened to me from Sarah's trauma was some of the worst things I can imagine anyone living through. And Sarah, we talked about that even this morning. Just something came up, something that she had packed for herself when she, because we're kind of emptying some of that. And I'm like, you took that, because that really would be more meaningful to me, I think, than to you. And she was like, yeah, I made some really bad decisions. And so this has been a very costly thing for me. My whole life has changed you know, from writing to traveling to all of that. Now, I don't feel like, oh, I've lost so much. It has all been a joy. Whatever I've had to give up, shift, change, to be with Sarah in this process, to watch her emerge in such beauty and wonder. I had one of the workers out here yesterday tell me, your wife is gold. Her heart, her concern for people. I go, I know, I get to live with that. And I saw that before the trauma moved. I did, but it's beautiful in a different way and more powerful way now. But the reality, I think John Wesley said something like, God uses the flesh of our friends to change us most, or the flesh of other believers. Hmm. And I think that's the other side of community. We look at all the benefit, encouragement, community, all that kind of stuff. But the reality is there's pain in it too. And my bearing the pain of someone else is a gift. Hmm. And it teaches me love at a level I need to learn love. So that's all good. Again, it's that thing we want of nobody's discomforted by, I'm not, and no one else is by me. That's what we all want. Yeah. But it's false. It's fake.
Yeah.
The fact is, love grows deeper when we share each other's pain, when I'm the victim of each other's pain. When I realize that something I've done has made Sarah a victim of something broken in me, then I get to apologize. We get to that relational repair, which is such a beautiful thing when you do it. Now, most of us, you know, avoid it, ignore it. I had someone really key in my life that I've missed for the last couple of years, had a chance to sit down with last week. And we did the hard work of relational repair. And man, I don't know why people hate it. I don't. People tell me, you know, you're too bold, too honest, too whatever. But I just go, I've waited for this. I waited till a time when God said, do it. And there's been untold pain here for me from someone else. And to be able to sit down and have the moment when we could both be tender and own our stuff and not manipulate or twist the other, just listen and care and love. And it's so beautiful. That's what I want to, you know, so community, I know we think, oh, community, we just sit around and share Jesus stories and we go away so encouraged. It's so lovely. That part is lovely. I love that stuff. But it's also, yeah, you're going to do something stupid. I'm going to do something stupid. It's going to hurt you. We get to sit down and work it out and learn to love and trust if we dare. And if we don't dare, then we just cut off the relationship and then you've lost everything. So this is, I want to say to people, if you're bearing the pain of someone else's brokenness, consider it a gift. Don't consider it, oh, he's such a creepy person or she is or whatever. And to the person who, like you, when you realize that your stuff is causing pain elsewhere, that's where you get to own it in meaningful ways of, sweetheart, I'm sorry. Honestly, me and Jesus are sorting through this together. It's not untangled yet. And it can become part of the humor in the relationship. It does for Sarah and I. It has really, and we've laughed at things where other people are like, you guys laugh about that because they've heard the story in the podcast and they feel like, man, just you don't joke about that stuff. Well, Sarah and I do, genuinely do. And I back up to go, that was funny. Was that really funny for you? I'm fine with that. And I love that we can joke our way through this at times and other times cry our way through it. And other times have this reading on a Sunday night when we weren't really expecting anything profound to drop on us. And we just sit there in the immensity of what God's done to plunge into her darkness. That's the phrase that really gets me. That's why I love the shack when Paul sent it to me at the very beginning. God plunges into the darkness, not the angry judge, really. He's the healer. I'm going to show up where you're broken. And when I read that, that's why I read the verse that was less meaningful to Sarah and I. It wasn't part of our story, but that God's not desiring anyone to perish. This healing is available to everyone. But you've got to have the willingness to lean in there as long as it takes.
Yeah.
And not jump out. Even the parable Jesus tells is a disgusting parable of perseverance. But the woman comes to a judge and he's just too tired. She comes to him in the middle of the night. He wants to sleep and she keeps banging on the door. And even the parable Jesus said, just not because he cared about the woman, but because he was tired of being bothered, he gets up to him and say, the parable is really a mess.
Yeah.
But the heart of it is this, you've got to be like that woman. about the brokenness in your life. You've got to be perseverant. Not because God will reward perseverance. It's not that. That'd be the bad side of the parable, right? God, okay, you just haven't been persistent enough. No, the untangling takes persistence. It takes you hanging in there with God. And if you can see God not as the enemy from which you must get your healing, not the adversary, he's the compatriot. He's with you in ways you can't see, doing things that may cause you more pain, but that's part of it. It's the surgeon, you know, this is going to hurt. This is going to leave a mark, but I got to go here to get there.
Yeah.
And we don't have that perspective. We can't see that. So what we have to have is the trust. I have nowhere else to go. This is the God I'm going to hang in here with. I'm going to bank my whole life on his reality and his healing and his love. And if that's wrong, then I will die miserable. I think sometimes you just got to stake it there. If God isn't who he says he is, then as Paul said, we're all men most miserable. This is a dumb life to live if he isn't real, isn't there, isn't at work, and if there isn't a resurrection of the dead things in our lives.
Yeah, and that brings me back to Theodore Roosevelt's words when he's from his excerpt of his speech they called The Man in the Arena, where he's talking, at least if I fail daring greatly, so that my place is never with the cold and timid souls who know neither victory nor defeat. Right? I'm staying in this. I'm putting my heart into this. And I think for me, in order to really be able to do that, you have to have seen a snapshot, not only of how he loves you, but you have to have seen a snapshot of that buried treasure, right? Like the parable where he finds the treasure in the field, and I'm assuming he probably reburies it, right? And like takes off.
Till you
like,
own okay, the I'm land. Go, yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to go buy the land so that I can have the treasure. And I think that's a piece of this is, if you haven't caught a glimpse of the treasure of your love or of his love, as well as the treasure that he is building in you, the thing that he is unfolding and the working out of your salvation by him in your life.
And I would say this, even the treasure you are to him in the chaos.
Yes.
See, he'll make me a treasure someday. Well, yeah, your life will become more of a treasure to others as it heals, but you're a treasure to him in your most lost state.
Period.
Yeah.
But like before any shining takes place, before any working out happens.
You are the treasure he's rescuing. And we lose sight of that. And when we do, that's why I think most Christians I've known in my life die short of the healing God would have provided in their lives. So are they going to get healed on the other side? Well, of course. But the idea they could have walked in greater freedom, greater love, greater rest, greater community here.
Yeah.
But there was no perseverance. It would just get to that point of, man, this is really tough. I'm gonna resort to my trinkets, my shiny things, my amusements. I'm just going to go back to medicate the pain rather than sit in it with him. So the untangling can take place. Like this would be like Sarah bringing me her necklace and I'm untangling it on the counter. And then partway through, she just comes and I need it back right now. She takes it and then throws it in a drawer or whatever and brings it back. Now it's worse, right? Yeah. It's not better. Yeah. It's worse. And so I start again. And I think that is the parable of so many in our engagement with God. And I would say for the first 40 years, that would have been true of my journey as well. I would have a lot of, okay, God, I give you this, untangle it, and then I can't wait that long. I just can't take it anymore. I pull back, pull away. You know what? And he always lets you pull away. You want to pull away? Pull away. You want to bring it back to me? It's in worse shape. I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it now. And the goal is still the same. I'm still going to rescue you. And thankfully, Sarah left the necklaces with me. So there wasn't a continued untangling. We didn't move twice more. So whatever got messed up in the moving. Sarah's usually, she puts her necklace things down straws and puts a twist tie. She's very careful with those things so they don't get tangled. So how these got tangled in the move, this is so unlike this to happen for Sarah. But man, I tell you what, that's God saying, okay, you dropped it here, happy to help. You're going to take it away. Okay. And so when Jesus encourages us to perseverance, I think the thing I thought about that parable was because God's reluctant And until you really show him you're serious, instead of, no, I'm working on this, and you pull away. And come back, I'm working on this. Not you need to work, I'm working on this. Just stay with me. Let's get through this. And oh my gosh, it's it the beauty of letting it have its work. In that parable that I just told about the unrighteous judge or whatever it was, at the end of it, Jesus says, when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth? Bob Prater raised that with me in a conversation a little while back, and it was like, whoa. Jesus, get it. Jesus is wondering that by the time it takes everything to happen in the creation that needs to happen for the resurrection of all things, which is still not happened, 2,000 years after he's spoken these words. This is a long stretch here. And Jesus is wondering, will there still be faith left on the earth? That the possibility is no one has the perseverance. The parable of the five virgins with oil at the wedding and five virgins with not enough oil. The question is, do you have enough perseverance, putting all your eggs in this basket?
Yeah.
And the idea is, well, I'll put them there for a time, and I'm going to kind of see, maybe I need to, you know, like Sarah could come and say, it's taking you an hour. I'm going to take that to a jeweler or something. And then it goes in the drawer, and it never gets to a jeweler. That's, I think we do that with God. Instead of, I have no other hope. I'm going to stay here. And I have enough story. I have enough people I know that have persevered through the worst of crud and come out renewed and redeemed on the other end. So I can be in the middle of my stuff saying, I don't see it. I don't see what he's doing. I don't know that he's doing anything. I feel horribly unloved. But you only feel unloved. It's not that you are unloved. You only feel unloved. And while that is significant, it's not the only thing.
Yeah.
If you know that you're loved beyond your feelings and lean into a God who is who he said he is, then you'll find your way into that freedom. He will. Mm. The only thing we can do is take ourselves out of it by going, too much. Nope, going to turn on the football game every day. Going to lose myself in my in my other passions. And you can still enjoy those other passions. Just don't lose yourself there.
Yeah.
Stay in the process. Get the help you need. Find somebody to encourage you. Do whatever. Stay in it. And then, like I read a note from Lisa last week. I've watched Lisa for 10 years. Just watch that. And the pain, and it's never going to change. I see all that stuff. I know. And then when the untangling gets to a place where you can see it and you see yourself better and why you got tricked into dark places, then the encouragement comes and the work's not done yet, but now it's easier to stay. It's easier to stay with him because you just don't want to take it anywhere else. You just don't trust anybody else to deal with it.
I think that's, again, circling back to talking about community as well. I think that's where really, really rich community is so incredibly vital, because there are times that I may not have the resiliency, I may not have the endurance, and yet because of the people that I have around my life that are an intimate part of it, that get to see all the details, both in its glory and its complete mess, they also have the ability to shoulder some of that burden, to encourage me, to champion me on when I don't know if I have what it takes to finish it out or to keep going. I got a call from, and this is, I definitely fall into the category of maybe one of the best things that I've heard potentially this year. But one of my best friends is a part of my core group of guys. He was one of the co-best men at my wedding. He called me just a couple days ago and said, hey, I don't know if I've ever told you this, but I just wanted to thank you for our friendship. And I don't even know if I would have been a believer if it hadn't been for you and I meeting that summer. Oh. And he's like, I was in a very parallel place in my faith and just didn't know if it was even worth it to continue. And he was like, I came in and he's like, I was a pretty major a-hole to you. I did not treat you well. And yet you and I were able to connect that summer in a way that made me believe that there was hope. And that, I mean, I'm sitting here making dinner with my in-laws, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, like I'm trying not to completely lose it into the chicken that I was making as I'm talking, or the turkey that I was making with my friend or for my friends. But it was just one of those moments where, I mean, this is an individual that I have trusted my life physically, spiritually, and emotionally with on countless occasions. Mm-hmm. And I got into a really interesting conversation over the last week and a half. And one of the conversations was like, what about, you know, what are the characteristics of a man that you look for in somebody that either you would trust in a romantic relationship or a friendship? Like, what are some of the characteristics that you look for? And one of the very first things that stood out to me was observe their life, whether they're a guy or a gal, observe their life. And do they have community around them that have seen them in their mess, that they're able to let their guards down, to be free with, to be completely seen, and have allowed themselves to be completely loved at the same time? Because if they don't, man, I that would be an initial caution of, have they even learned some of those deep relational foundation attributes that are needed in order to have those rich friendships or to have that committed marriage or, you know, whatever that might be. And I was just thinking about how richly blessed I have been, you being one of those individuals that have been a part of my life, that when it hits the fan, I've got a list of people that I can call that have seen my life both in the dark and in the light, that I know I can trust and I know that I can lean into. And I know that when the endurance runs out and when my capacity runs out, there are people who will soldier on alongside of me. And that's an incredible, I mean, I don't know how else to do life, and especially in this world, in the space that we're in the reality we're living in right now.
That seems incredibly rare too, particularly at a young age. When you're telling a young person, find somebody who's completely exposed in community and okay with it, going, oh, okay, well, that limits the herd. The target market here now has gotten very small. Because I think we, in some ways, we grow our whole lives to that, right? You're a pretty open guy, and you put stuff out there really quickly with people, and you're not too worried if people don't take it well, you know? Yeah. Other people just are so injured and reserved and got it all tied up in here somewhere where they just don't let people in at that level. And then you're right, when it really hits the fan, they don't have the relationships to come alongside. And I get those emails a lot. I have no one to talk to about this. And part of it's because we spent so much of our time in religious settings where relationships were discouraged beyond the superficial. We're all conforming to whatever the pastor wants here. We haven't had the depth of relationship where someone has stood with me through my darkest moment. And even when they were the victim of my actions and loved me anyway, and were there the next day. And if you don't have that in your life, you're the poorer, no doubt about it. But you're going to find it as God leads you to some things and you open your life and take risks. We talked about that last week from Teresa's side. It's all about risking. It's all about moving outside your comfort zone. And it's so easy now with TV so ready at hand and amusements. You can live your whole life by yourself and just amuse yourself out of stuff instead of, no, I want to find my way into real wholeness personally, which we've been talking about, as long as it takes, and then to real community too. Not just the good side of community, also the more painful side. Because that's where vulnerability and anguish and hurting with somebody, that's all part of it. But again, and I know we talked about this last week. If you don't have the emotional reserve to hold people's pain, and so you're just looking for people to encourage you, that's not going to lead you to authentic community either. You've got to find a way to hold both and take some hard stuff and take some fun stuff and let a relationship be what it is. But if you hang in there, to me, the worst thing that happens is when people pull themselves out of that stuff with God or pull themselves out of community because it got awkward or risky or uncomfortable. The best relationships I have, I can't think of one close friendship I have that didn't have its awkward moments that couldn't have broken up over, looking back, saying trivial thing, but at the time they didn't seem trivial. But if you couldn't build the relationship back, if you couldn't sit down and air the hurt and find the tenderness from the other person to be in that, then yeah, you're not rich in terms of relationships, and relationships in this life is what make us rich.
And I mean, I would say, Wayne, that it took the first 20, I didn't live that way at all for the first 20 years of my life. I've only been in this for about 17 years of being able to live in a way that I can share my heart. I can allow it to be seen, because it wasn't safe for the first 20 years of my life. It wasn't. And it, like, this individual that I was just referring to that gave me a call, one of the things that he really helped me with is he was a bull in a china shop. He basically was like, I don't care whether you want to be my friend or not, we're going to be. And so you're just going to have to deal with it. He literally said those exact words to me around the campfire one night. I was like, you're not going to get rid of me. You're just going to have to deal with it because I'm stuck now. And there was part of me that was very resistant to that, of like,
no kidding. No, yeah.
I'm going to make you, you're going to cost for that. That's going to cost you a little bit.
Yeah. Shields like, up. I'm not letting you in here. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And yet he saw in the connection that we had something that was valuable enough. He saw the unrefined, completely messy, covered in manure.
Yeah, that's it. Clean it up. Treasure. Clean it up. Clean it up.
Covered in manure treasure. That he said, no, this is worth hanging in here for, this, because there's going to be a lot of richness that I want to see where this goes, and it's worth hanging in for as long as it takes. And that, man, that is a rare thing. And I really hope, especially the younger audiences, I hope they hear the value of starting to take that risk.
Yeah, me too.
Because the counterfeit substitute that is found in social media, where you can stay largely, where you can stay as anonymous and disconnected as you want to, or in your traditional religious settings, where you can stay in the back pew or the back seat for as long as you want to and don't actually have to commit to that relational encounter. Man, that's like standing holding a full park hopper pass in Disneyland and never leaving the parking lot. Why?
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.